You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
We're going to be hearing from Green Bay Mayor Eric Genrich in less than 15 minutes here, and then we're just about an hour away from talking to Dan Schaefer from the recombobulation area. By the way, it was Dan's recombobulation area site where we first saw the guest op-ed from Eric Genrich on what Democrats need to do in 2026. You can read everything that Dan and his guest columnists write about over at therecombobulationarea.news. Again, therecombobulationarea.news. I mentioned earlier as well that Cassandra, I believe it was heading to Wausau for the Joint Finance Committee. Yes, it was Cassandra saying that she was going to be talking, hopefully giving testimony on special education and public schools. There will be a lot of people gathered in Wausau for that meeting of the Joint Finance Committee. But if you can't make it, it's okay. It is still very easy for you to jot down some thoughts and tell the legislators on the Joint Finance Committee what you think their priorities ought to be in the state budget. Go to your email machine and send them to this address, budget.comments@legis, for legislature, L-E-G-I-S, .wisconsin.gov. So one more time, budget.comments@legis.wisconsin.gov, and give your legislators a piece of your mind. Well, this does mark the 100th day of the Trump administration, and well, the way I see it, on his 100th day back in the Oval Office, President Trump awoke this morning to the election results out of Canada, and he lost. I mean, indirectly, he wasn't quite running for anything in Canada, except to maybe annex it as the 51st state. It was a loss, just the same. And that surprising result from the Canadian elections might guide Wisconsin and the rest of America in its handling of the remaining days of the Trump administration. We are 100 days in. We have, brace yourself, 1,362 days to go. The previous 99 days can be fairly described as all pain and no gain. Hundreds of thousands of jobs lost, a condition that in any other situation would be seen as an economic catastrophe. Uncertainty caused collapse in the financial markets, putting at risk the retirement security of millions of Americans. A trade war without any well-articulated battle plan is going to possibly leave store shelves empty. And that'll happen well before the holiday shopping season if nothing changes. And in a development that maybe isn't personal to the average American, but arguably as serious, our Congress has gone comatose. Its once boisterous Republican leaders have been reduced to supplicants who don't dare offend their party leader by engaging in the very oversight that our nation's founders handed them as a way to ward off attacks on democracy, the likes of which we see nearly every day, including now in a Milwaukee courthouse. Some folks would say, well, this is exactly what Donald Trump promised. He did say, "I will be your retribution." Well, that's the kind of raw meat that his supporters devour. They devour it with gusto, but his message to mainstream America was much different, and it was centered on economic responsibility. This whole DOGE thing started with what many voters thought were good intentions. He said last September to the New York Economic Club, "I will create a government efficiency commission tasked with conducting a complete financial performance and audit of the entire federal government and make recommendations for drastic reforms." And that all sounded harmless enough because everybody thinks that they can identify something that they would consider to be wasteful spending. But here are the examples of wasteful spending that have affected people in Wisconsin. Veterans health care. Healthy food for low-income families. A UW-Madison study to figure out how the COVID virus replicates in order to improve future vaccines. That's wasteful spending. putting local farm food in local school lunches, farmland conservation, Wisconsin libraries, Wisconsin museums, programs that provide lower utility bills, jobs at the National Weather Service, jobs at the Environmental Protection Agency, cancer research, humanitarian aid, suspending FDA testing of milk. I could go on and on, but here's the point. There is no point. The administration has not shown how any of this chaos is supposed to make things better in the long run for the economy and our lives anytime soon. And it's not as if all this savings will be put into our pockets. We've talked about this before. All of these cuts are simply meant to offset massive tax cuts geared toward the massively wealthy. It is nothing more than a transfer of resources away from the middle class and moving on up. And if this has become that obvious in the first 100 days, one can only imagine what things might be like on day 200, unless this president sees a perpetual public pushback against things that voters surely did not vote for. And that's where we turn to Canada, where, again, after months of Trump insults and tariffs and jokes about annexation, the Liberal Party there not only avoided the electoral catastrophe that was initially predicted, but instead it nearly won an outright majority in Parliament yesterday. Prime Minister Mark Carney won by taking the fight directly to Trump and emphasizing national sovereignty. He said, "We are over the shock of American betrayal, but we should never forget the lessons," noting that the mutually beneficial system Canada and the U.S. had shared since World War II has come to an end. And it should be a reminder to everybody on this side of the border who's been taking part in an ongoing series of demonstrations, big and small, that the general public does not follow politics on a regular basis. And the only way to remind them of Donald Trump's true record is to never stop making it a public issue. Or as Todd Alba likes to say, keep banging your drum. It's working. We saw proof of that north of the border just yesterday. We will be hearing from Green Bay Mayor Eric Genrich coming up next here as part of your mornings. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Coming up 1 hour from now, Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area and Civic Media's political editor. It is at his site where you will find a recent op-ed from Green Bay Mayor Eric Genrich entitled, "Where the Democratic Party Should Go From Here? What do you want for this country? Is it an authoritarian oligarchy or a populist democracy?" You can read it all at Dan's site, therecombobulationarea.news. A few days ago, I spoke with Mayor Genrich, who is also a former state legislator, and I asked him about the genesis for this particular column.
You know, I've been very fortunate to have worked in state politics, to have served in the state legislature, to have worked for a congressman, now to be, you know, serving at the local level. So I've had, you know, kind of a diverse viewpoint of how politics can be practiced at a multitude of different levels. And, you know, my opinion is just one of many, right? But felt like I had something to say, or at least wanted to put something out into the ether. And so, you know, put this this op-ed together, grateful to Dan for publishing it. To your point, you know, I think I, like a lot of people, really encouraged, obviously, by the state Supreme Court election. But, you know, that's the kind of election that our voters are well-placed now to turn out for. And, you know, that kind of advantage is not necessarily the same coalition who's going to come out for the next presidential. That demographic, that electorate is going to be much closer to what we saw in 2024. So it's encouraging, no doubt. And I think it's a really great indicator for other special elections to play out between now and 2026. And even I think gives me a lot of optimism for how things might turnout in 2026. But, you know, we can't simply allow for, you know, our prospects to rise and fall based on the kinds of people that turn out for elections. I think it's really important for Democrats to think about those voters who used to be on our team and who have kind of shifted away from us. And the reality of that is more working class folks, working class people of color even, have shifted away from the Democratic Party, and we've got to figure out how to get them back.
Do you have a leading theory on what it is that caused Democrats to lose them? Was it something Democrats did, or did Republicans somehow improve on their messaging and persuasion or ideas, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a combination of factors. And for me, it's not entirely about ideology. I think some of it is really honestly about disposition and how you view the party, how it relates to the status quo, how closely voters associated Democrats with the status quo, with the establishment. And so I think we've got to do a much better job of letting people know that we're not satisfied with, you know, the quality of the lives of everyday Americans. The original title of the op-ed was kind of based on that bumper sticker, which I referenced in the piece, which is "We the People are pissed." And I think, you know, we've got to do a better job as elected officials, as Democrats, in really empathizing with that feeling and making it clear that we're pissed too. And we've got a lot to be indignant about when it comes to, you know, the America that corporations have created for us in a lot of respects. And we've got to make it clear that we're interested in pushing back on that, you know, breaking up monopolies where they exist and really fighting for working people.
Well, and that's the part that gets to that really gnaws at me, is there are definitely people who feel like we should just blow up the whole system, that don't defend the system, don't defend the status quo. Okay, I hear that. But now I see a bunch of people blowing up the wrong parts of it. They're blowing up due process. They're right. Blowing up checks and balances. They're blowing up programs that have funded all manner of essential services, rather than blowing up, like you said, the monopoly power and other things that are really causing that discomfort to people.
Right.
And how come Democrats haven't been able to do a better job of that? Is it that they're not wanting to, you know, cheese off some of their allies, or just something else?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to diagnose that entirely, but I do think, you know, a person that I reference in the piece is Ezra Klein, who, I listened to a fair amount, I haven't had the chance to read his book yet. But, you know, I think his analysis is a little bit like, you know, liberals or Democrats have kind of prioritized process instead of outcomes. And I think I've witnessed that, working most closely with a local bureaucracy, but also being familiar with state and federal bureaucracies. And I think, unfortunately, there are elements of the Democratic coalition that, you know, are a little bit too focused on process and aren't as enthusiastic and really pushing towards the outcomes that people want to see. The legislation that came out of the Biden administration and the Democratic Congress that served with him is and what was and is history making, really. I mean, tremendous kind of policy achievements with the American Rescue Plan Act, bipartisan infrastructure law, you know, inflation reduction, CHIPS and Science, some tremendous stuff included in that. But the American Rescue Plan Act was really the exception of that basket of policy, in the sense that, you know, that's the kind of stuff that was implemented immediately. It did not honor existing bureaucratic requirements in many instances, and as a result, you know, those programs were created rapidly. That money flowed directly to local communities. I think, you know, in some respects, that's a good playbook for us. You know, we've got to create good policies, but we got to make sure that they're implemented in a timescale that makes sense to people.
That part is true. And when it comes to the book Abundance that Ezra Klein has written along with Derek Thompson, I believe, and they lay out the problems that can come from overregulation and too much process. But I also do see the pushback that's coming on that book and reminding people that it's not just red tape for the sake of red tape. But the fact of the matter is, a lot of that delay in the process came from corporations themselves that have put things in the process that have stalled clean energy projects and have stalled broadband expansion and have stalled, housing and construction rules that could be fixed. And it always seems to come down to that notion of taking on corporate monopoly power and influence. I mean, you can be against, government waste, but then we have to realize, that there's a lot of folks from Elon Musk on down that think we're the waste, that they're talking about, that people are, like you write, are uncomfortable with undocumented immigration. And yet these are the same people who blocked a bipartisan solution. These are people who say they're against inflation, but their solution has been things like a trade war that's going to drive up prices. And it really does come back to a point that you made that Joe Biden and other Democrats had all these things, the American Rescue Plan, the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, the Inflation Reduction Act, the CHIPS and Science Act. How did they not turn all of that into a well-oiled self-promotion machine that said, no, you're not going to get it all next week, but it is all on the way. And you and I both know how that struggle is very real watching progressive messaging over the years.
Right. No, very true. And I think, Joe Biden, a truly decent man and a history-making president in many respects with regard to the legislation that I touched on, but obviously not a very effective communicator. And I think, that hobbled the Democrats going into the 2024 election. Obviously made a change there at the 11th hour. But that was a difficult situation to navigate, and not having somebody in the White House who could fully utilize the bully pulpit that comes along with that office, was a challenge. I mean, one thing just to, and I would reinforce everything that you were saying as far as, a lot of the, a good portion of the red tape is oftentimes associated with interest groups who have kind of captured the process intentionally. But one of the examples I pointed to in the piece was the reconstruction of our Mason Street Bridge, the Tillman Bridge, which is in downtown Green Bay. And it's a 10-year project. It's an existing bridge that we have to replace. Is that a timescale that we're really comfortable with, to replace an existing bridge? It's going to have a smaller footprint, hopefully, be much better oriented for pedestrians and cyclists and things, and be modernized. But, the Empire State Building was built in 500 days or whatever it was.
How about that bridge in Pennsylvania?
Right, exactly.
Got built in 12 days. So, like the point you made earlier, when it needs to get done, it can get done. And so clearly there is room to improve processes without throwing the baby out with the bathwater, knowing that some of these processes were put there for a reason, for some kind of safeguard. Right. And that's where we need, good, responsible people who are in the midst of all that, people like you who are writing about these things. So, so looking forward then, Mr. Mayor, do you feel like a lot of these discussions since November and since the progressive, victory here back in April are going to take Democrats and progressives to a better place when they're running in the midterms in 2026?
Yeah, I mean, I really do feel pretty good about things. I mean, just to see the way that everyday people have mobilized, of course, to turn out, for the state Supreme Court race, but even just with the, the demonstrations now that are taking place regularly. And I think it's really incumbent upon elected officials to kind of take their cues from voters who have stepped up on their own, not necessarily with a lot of direction always coming from Washington or Madison or other places. I think it's important for elected officials to honor and trust the sentiments of our base and of working class people and deliver, as best as we can on what we think they're asking us to do.
You can catch this column again at the recombobulation area that Dan Schaefer puts out. Look for the guest column from the Green Bay Mayor, Eric Enrich. Thank you so much again for joining us. Always great to talk to you. Thank you, sir.
Thanks so much, Pat.
And a reminder that we will be talking to Dan Schaefer in just a little bit more. But I, again, can't help but note that for folks who said last year in November that they just wanted to blow up the whole system. No, you didn't. You wanted to blow up the parts that weren't working for you. And instead, the parts that are being blown up are the parts that were working for you. The most notorious, I guess I could bring up, is that during the Biden administration, we saw the creation of the Consumer Financial Protection Board. And during the Obama era as well, of taking care of consumers. And that's one of the first things that Trump and Elon Musk blew up. And it was a way to make sure that banks were not nickel and diming you to death, and that they weren't opening accounts in your name without you knowing it, and all kinds of things like that. I will say again for the record, whenever you hear deregulation, you should think not about regulation, but of protection. I'm not telling you every regulation is good, but I'm telling you a lot of times when you hear about deregulation, it's about getting rid of protections. It's about getting rid of consumer protection. It's about getting rid of worker protection. It's about getting rid of environmental protection. And I understand some people say, well, there's too many environmental protections, and that just leads to red tape. But deregulation isn't just about environmental protection. It's about protecting consumers. It is about protecting workers. And consumers and workers are under attack more than any time we've ever seen. And it's those actions over these past 100 days that have taken what was the strongest recovery and has turned it into a near recession, with home sales down sharply in Wisconsin in March compared to the previous year. We'll continue on with Mornings with Pat Kreitlow across the Civic Media Radio Network coming up right after this. Chances are you were just listening to Pam Yonke and the Midwest Farm Report. Did you know the Midwest Farm Report is on for an hour every morning, 5 a.m. on Civic Media stations in Hayward, Oshkosh, Amory, and Richland Center, and the Civic Media app? Just head to that app and tune in one of those stations, and you can catch the full Midwest Farm Report weekday mornings for the hour before we get going here at 6 o'clock across the Civic Media Radio Network. Senator Jeff Smith and Representative Jody Emerson are standing by. First, one other news story to pass along out of Madison. There actually was an investigation into the leak of a Wisconsin Supreme Court abortion order last year, but the investigators concluded that while it was likely deliberate, they were unable to determine who was responsible. You'll recall that there are two abortion-related cases before the Wisconsin Supreme Court. One is a challenge of the 1849 ban. But the one that we're talking about here is a case that's been brought by Planned Parenthood, which is seeking a court to declare that abortion rights are protected by the state constitution. And the people bringing the case wanted the state Supreme Court to hear it directly. But before the state Supreme Court could issue that decision on whether they would take it up directly or not, the decision to take it up directly was leaked somehow. And after a long and somewhat expensive investigation, it's still not clear who the leaker was. And all seven justices simply said that this is something that was a breach of trust that the court had not experienced in its history. And all seven justices condemned the leak. So there's the latest on that. That's over in the east wing of the Capitol. Down in the south wing of the Capitol, you will find State Senator Jeff Smith. And over in the west wing of the Capitol, you will find State Representative Jody Emerson. You'll also find him in the Chippewa Valley, and you'll also find him on this fine radio program right now. Jeff and Jody, good morning. How are you guys?
Good morning, Pat.
Hey, good to see you, Pat.
You bet. Let's see. You guys are both down in Madison this week. You got business there, I assume, right?
Yes.
That's okay. Where I am.
Yes, you are. All right. Well, good. We know where we're at right now in terms of the Joint Finance Committee going through the state budget. It's a two-year state budget every year. Typically has to be done by June 30th. We're at the part of the process where the Joint Finance Committee has done four public hearings around the state. Now they will come back to a room, I believe, in the north wing of the Capitol. There, we've covered all four corners. And they will hash out what they think should be in the state budget. Jeff, we'll start with you. All that public comment that went into these past four hearings, all the emails that are coming in, How much good do you think it'll do for Republican leadership to adjust whatever their original plan is for the state budget?
We're hearing all sorts of things, mostly that this budget is not going to be done on time, as we keep hearing from sources on the Republican side. But I really think it's important that people also know the fact that as the same night that the governor released his budget, Robin Voss was quoted as saying it's dead in the water. It's not going to go move. We're going to create our own budget. And the budget that they just had hearings on and hundreds of people showed up in good faith to talk about was the budget that they already have told us they're going to trash. I think that's so disingenuous because now when they create their own budget, as is the case that we hear they're going to do, we're not going to have a public hearing on that one. By the time it gets to when it comes to the floor, we will have a budget that never had a public hearing. And I think that's really unfortunate and seems to me to be pretty undemocratic.
Yeah, it really, Jody, when you think about the process and people go, well, yeah, wait, you had these four hearings all around the state. Yeah, but we don't know what Governor Evers' proposed budget is, but we don't actually know what the final Republican version of a budget bill will look like, much less be able to comment on.
Well, I mean, I think that's the problem is neither do they. So I think we're hearing that this budget's not going to be coming on time. And I think that's because they don't have the ideas for what they want to do yet that can keep their seats safe and also keep the communities invested in their version of Wisconsin. You know, it's going to be devastating to local communities, especially school districts, our tech colleges, our universities, if we do not get this budget done on time or shortly thereafter. I mean, it can still come in sometime early July and not impact things. But when we're talking August, September, October, before the budget gets done, school districts have to set their budget based on what we give them as well. And they're going to have a hard time doing that when they don't know what we're doing. I was talking to President Rothman from the Universities of Wisconsin the other day in a hearing and asked him what would happen to the universities if we don't get this budget done on time. And he said it's very possible we would have a mid-year tuition adjustment. I don't think I've ever heard of that before in Wisconsin or any other state, but here we are.
And there really isn't any good reason for it. I mean, Republicans have been in the majority now for 14 years. They know how this process works. And yet so often it seems like they're making it up as they go along. And one area where you've seen that has been the funding for healthcare in the Chippewa Valley. After HSHS closed hospitals in Eau Claire and in Chippewa Falls. Jeff, if I'm not mistaken, if we get to the end of this current budget cycle, June 30th, and that was $5 million hasn't been released yet by Republicans, it goes away for good unless it's put in the next state budget. Are you hearing any indications from Republicans that they will at least roll that money over while they still fight over how the money should be applied to help out people and this healthcare crisis in Western Wisconsin?
I'm not going to hold my breath that they're going to do the right thing. $15 million is in the current budget, and just yesterday, as a matter of fact, in a hearing on a different subject, our co-chair, Howard Markline, was presenting a bill that he wants us to pass and actually fix something that he screwed up last time. And I said, I asked him, why should we fix something for you now? How can I trust you? Because you have not moved that $15 million to the Chippewa Valley as it was intended. And I slid down to the table a list of 10 instances when the Joint Finance Committee has done that exact thing on a 1310 request from an agency that they claim is illegal. He ignored me and got walked out of the room. So we're in a position where the Republicans do not want to help the Chippewa Valley.
Here's a note from Alicia on YouTube, who did attend the hearing in Wausau. I asked a GOP legislator what he wants to see in the budget. I kid you not, he said, I don't know. We'll have to see what Republicans write up, meaning his leadership, meaning that, you know, there's so very little input that it's whatever Robin Voss and Devin Lemieux want to put in. And look, again, I've been there. Russ Decker was the majority leader during my time there, and the majority leader has a lot of sway over what goes in it. But I don't recall ceding everything to the majority leader and saying, well, you just tell me what to vote on, I will. I don't know, Jody, maybe that's just a thing with Democrats where it's like, no, you're not just going to give us marching orders.
Well, we hear this on the floor every single floor session. Robin Voss will get up and do this impassioned speech about how the Democrats are just going to vote no on this, and they're not going to, you know, you're just going to listen to exactly what your leader says. And obviously, he's never been in one of our closed caucuses before.
No.
If he thinks that we just listen without argument and discussion to what leadership says. But I think it tells a lot about how he expects his caucus to run. So, you know, that's not how it works on our side. We definitely have spirited debates. We usually come to an agreement overall, but there's never been a time where I've ever heard anybody in my leadership say, you vote for this or else.
And
it just doesn't happen.
And in fact, Jeff, you probably missed it, but earlier I was sharing the full story of the debate over the smoking ban in 2007 and how there was nothing along party lines on that debate whatsoever. It was everybody for themselves. It was spirited. It was a free for all. I've never had so many, you know, fellow Democrats, you know, just want to vilify me for trying to find a compromise. And in hindsight now, that's almost refreshing as opposed to just the marching orders that we've been seeing for the past 14 years.
It's the way things are supposed to be done, actually, right? And yeah. I will add to what what we just heard from a listener, and that is in a very recent, like a week or two ago, at a forum, Representative Moses down at the end of the table said, "We have a very weak legislature." So
whoa,
yeah,
okay,
an admission from Moses that they are weak, and it's unfortunate. It's really bizarre.
And the thing of it is, with a smaller majority, Clint Moses and others, you know, it'd only take a handful to actually, you know, bring the caucus to a halt and say, no, we want to consider this. For example, an extension of postpartum care under Medicaid, where, again, Jody, if I'm not mistaken, we're talking to Jody Emerson, state representative here from Eau Claire, and Senator Jeff Smith. Jody, I think you almost have a majority of the assembly itself that is a co-sponsor of this measure, and it's just Robin Voss, the speaker, single-handedly holding it up.
Yeah, well, that bill passed the Senate, I think, 32-1.
Yep.
And it's now in the assembly hands. The last time I counted, and people can always add their names at any point, we had 66 out of 99 co-sponsors of that bill. That bill will pass if we bring it up. Somehow, for some reason, Robin Voss is the one person who is standing in the way of this.
Well, and he says, well, there's other people who are opposed to it too, but they're making me take all the heat for it. Yeah, but again, 66 co-sponsors.
You only need 50.
Should tell you something right there. Let me switch gears to the federal budget for a moment, because I know we had something that just impacted the Chippewa Valley, and that was the cutting of AmeriCorps volunteers at the Beaver Creek Reserve and throughout the community. Jody, when I think of waste, fraud, and abuse in a federal budget, I do not think of the Beaver Creek Reserve and community volunteers.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what was, you know, equitable, inclusive, and diversified about Beaver Creek Reserve, other than maybe the diversity of the flora and fauna that are there. But AmeriCorps volunteers do some amazing stuff. They're helping teach people how to read. They're in our communities doing, you know, things with kids to make sure that they've got summer programs and stuff. And Without warning, all of a sudden the ones, Beaver Creek Reserve is one of the examples in my district where I think they lost five AmeriCorps volunteers at the snap of a finger. There's like 400 of them around the state that lost their jobs this week. What I don't understand about the way that the federal government is doing this is with the Thanos snap of a finger, they're changing things.
Yeah.
Why are they not letting people go through the end of their contract?
Right. Or,
determining.
Be more of a fine-tooth comb to look for the actual waste, fraud, and abuse. State Representative Jody Emerson from Eau Claire, State Senator Jeff Smith from Eau Claire County talking to us more about the state budget process. Coming up in our 8 o'clock hour is Joe Zepecki. Hey, remember, you can follow my team at Up North News all day long through our newsletter, social media, and our website, upnorthnewswi.com. And of course, right here, mornings on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back. It is 8:35 now, the time. And again, a reminder that Jane Matinair will be along next to tell us what's coming up on Matinair on Air. And we have Dan Schaefer with us here tomorrow, along with Green Bay Mayor Eric Genrich. In our newsletter, sign up for it at upnorthnewswi.com. There includes an article about all the farmers markets that you can find around Wisconsin, many that will be opening soon. And some of the biggest ones that you might want to put on your road trip bucket list, perhaps none more so than the one in the district of our next guest here, State Senator Kel DeRoys, who joins us from up in the Hayward area where the Joint Finance Committee is going to be meeting to talk about the state budget. So we're going to talk about the state budget. We're going to talk about women's health. But since we were just talking about farmers markets and your backyard, we're going to first say good morning to Kel and talk about how envious we are that big old market that wraps all around the state capitol building is right there in your backyard.
It is a must do. And it's always so much fun to go, even with my kids who run around like crazy people and just demand sweets.
You know what? I run around there like a crazy person. Not for the sweets so much, but for the spicy cheese bread. That's
yeah,
there.
And the fresh cheese curds. I mean, there's just so many great things there.
It's just amazing. Okay, well, let's start on a very serious topic here, and then we're going to get to joint finance and to women's health. But this politically motivated arrest of a Milwaukee County judge on Friday perhaps might have been an even bigger splash publicly if it weren't for a Friday. But I don't think that the anger over it is going to be dissipating. I think it's only going to grow as more people, especially those who are Republican leaning, go, this is not what they say it is. This is something that's not cool, arresting a judge. And that's the most flippant way I can put it, saying it's not cool. It's serious, Kelda.
It's very serious. I mean, as an attorney, I read the criminal complaint, so-called complaint from the FBI agent, and there's really nothing there. They didn't like that she was angry that they were showing up in her courtroom to try to arrest and deport someone who was appearing there. I mean, we all have an interest in society in people being willing to come to court. If you have been victimized, if you are a witness and you need to testify against somebody in a criminal trial, if you need to show up to court for family law, everybody deserves to be able to have their day in court. And that includes people who are immigrants, whether they're documented or not. And to turn the courthouse into a place where people are getting arrested and judges who are trying to administer justice are being hauled off in handcuffs in an attempt to intimidate them, that is very scary. That is, you know, one of the clearest signals we have that they are marching full bore towards authoritarianism.
And to second that notion, not just the authoritarianism, but the intimidation, it's not as if they don't know where a lot of these folks are or have been. They may see that they are in court records. And even then, they could certainly try to, you know, arrest them outside of the courthouse. But to do this right outside a judge's chamber, right outside a courtroom, can't be interpreted any other way than an authoritarian intimidation tactic.
Absolutely. And as Ann Jacobs pointed out, the door that they went through went to a public hallway. And one of the agents actually rode the elevator with the person, but didn't arrest him in the elevator. Yeah. And, you know, they kind of manufactured this situation because they wanted to make an example of her. And I think it has a lot to do with also deflecting attention from the fact that they have deported numerous children, United States citizens, babies, some of whom were suffering from cancer. And they just put them on a plane to another country with no medication and no support.
It is the things that we're going to continue to learn. But again, you have these kinds of diversions. And frankly, it was reading the interpretation from Ann Jacobs, who's the chair of the Wisconsin Elections Commission and just a top-notch lawyer. And you read through that and you realize, I'm not going to say it was a setup, but, and let me hasten to add one thing here. When people go, oh, it's Democrats, you don't mind it, they could do anything. No, there are things that this judge or any other judge could be doing where we would say, no, you may not have liked the situation, but you can't do that. But pointing somebody toward a door that didn't continue to cause the chaos outside her courthouse, that just takes things to a whole different level, which is why we wanted to have the discussion that we did. Let's cover while you're up in Hayward and Wausau as a member of the Joint Finance Committee, going over the state budget where people can again have their public input. I'm sure you expect a busy day. What are you expecting to hear?
Well, I'm expecting to hear from people all over northern Wisconsin about how important it is for us to be funding our K-12 public schools. We know that Republicans have put our public schools and our kids on a starvation diet for 15 years. Meanwhile, they've been shoveling massive tax breaks to millionaires and billionaires and taking money out of the public school system to put it into private, unaccountable voucher schools. People are mad all over the state when they talk about what it means for their kids to have these underfunded schools, what it's doing to our teachers, and it's causing a crisis in education. People are also concerned about childcare, very concerned about potential cuts to Badger Care, and of course, all the chaos and corruption and fiscal mismanagement that we see from the public administration.
And so if folks want to, if they can't be in Hayward today or Wausau tomorrow, we've mentioned this several times, there is an email address that you can use to give legislators on the Joint Finance Committee your input. And it goes like this, budget.comments at legis, L-E-G-I-S for legislature, legis.wisconsin.gov. One more time, budget.comments at legis.wisconsin.gov. Kelda, as a state senator for you, former state senator to me, you and I both know those emails do not go into a black hole. There is significance in letting people know, letting legislators know what you think.
Absolutely. And in the aggregate, you know, it's very, very clear to see what people care about and what they want our state government to fund, and that Republicans haven't been doing it.
No, and sometimes, not necessarily on a dime, but sometimes you see a change of heart or a change in position. And I would point toward the recent vote in the state Senate overwhelmingly to extend postpartum care, postpartum Medicaid coverage to women for 12 months postpartum, not just 60 days. Now, there's still an uphill battle to get it past Speaker Voss in the Assembly. So we can talk about the merits of the issue, but I guess just from the standpoint of there are still things that, you know, can become increasingly bipartisan if people continue to know what they think their lawmakers should be doing, they can make a difference.
That's absolutely right. I mean, and, you know, several years ago, you really didn't have Republicans standing up for new moms on Badger Care. They were fine to let our state kick new moms off 60 days after giving birth. But over time, I think the public pressure has grown so great. I mean, it's so cruel. And we have kind of a third world infant and maternal mortality rate driven in large part by the lack of healthcare and health insurance coverage for new moms, especially low-income new moms who often have to go right back to work with no leave. And over time, the Republicans have responded to that pressure. But It remains to be seen whether they're willing to actually stand up for their convictions, stand up for these new moms, or they're just going to let the speaker continue to block it and hide behind him. And there are two ways that they could pass this bill, even over the speaker's objections. The first is they could put it in the budget. They don't need a single assembly Republican. They have all the Senate Democratic votes and assembly Democratic votes and every Senate Republican who already voted for it. We could put it in the budget today. Well, not today because we're not voting, but we could certainly keep it in the budget. The other thing they could do is they could try to pull the bill in the assembly onto the floor out of committee. Now they would have to break ranks and they would have to say, no, Voss, this is more important than your power plays. And it remains to be seen whether Republicans are willing to do that.
This is, something that I first heard about last week. And I think from you or somebody quoting you about the whole notion of just put it in the budget bill. And by the way, for folks who go, oh, no, the Republicans, they always strip all policy out of the budget bill. No, they don't. They strip out the policy they don't like.
Right.
This is something that still could very easily go in the budget bill. And it would be a great way for Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee who want to just send a little message to Robin Voss saying this is so overwhelmingly bipartisan that, mm-hmm. We're not letting you wield all the power on this one.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about the bill that would remove abortion care restrictions, restore health care rights in Wisconsin. What's in the legislation that you and others have introduced?
We just launched the Abortion Rights Restoration Act, and this bill does a number of really important things. Number one, it puts into state statute that you and I all have a right to bodily autonomy. We get to make our own healthcare decisions, including abortion. Number two, it repeals that horrible 1849 law that bans virtually all abortion in the state. And number three, it repeals a lot of the Walker-era restrictions that made abortion so difficult for people to get, so burdensome and so much more expensive that even under Roe v. Wade, many women did not functionally have the true right to access abortion. So it does all those three things and basically says there's never a circumstance, there's never a time when a politician knows better than you and your doctor what's best for you and your life and your circumstances.
Now, this is, again, a case of a bill that I'm going to safely predict is not going to be passed into law.
Oh, and Pat. Yet,
I know, I'm such a negative Nancy. But there's a reason why you still introduce things like these. So allow me to put that ball on the tee. Why even put these bills in the hopper?
Because I think it's really important for the voters who elected us and handed Democrats enormous victories in the legislature to know that we're fighting for them. We're not giving up on this issue. We also need to put pressure on these Republicans. You know, abortion is popular. It's way more popular than the Republican Party right now. 81% of people want this to be a private decision between a patient and a doctor, not a political one where you've got Republican politicians inserting themselves. So their position is deeply unpopular, and I think it's up to us to force the issue and make them talk about it. And, you know, within 24 hours of releasing that bill, we had one state rep put out a really unhinged press release attacking me and comparing abortion rights to the Holocaust and people who have abortions to Hitler. I mean, it was crazy, unhinged. And I think it's important that people see that because it does inform how active they are and their voting decision.
And you do see this in floor debates. I know that Dr. Kristen Lierley and I, 2 years ago in the budget, during the floor debate, we brought up these excerpts from Republicans. You know, one of them said, well, as a veterinarian, I know more about the biology of birth than almost anybody in this chamber and other similar ridiculousness. So it is important that these bills are introduced, that they're talked about, which is why we have civic media. It's why we have Up North News, is to say, look, a lot of mainstream media sites are simply not talking about these kinds of things, and you deserve to know what these legislators are introducing and what the significance would be. And the last thing, Kelda, would be that this is actually standing up for a position and not some kind of a move toward the mushy middle, which I know a lot of Democrats get pinged on. This is not just, well, we'll keep these restrictions, but not these. It's no, this is a right is a right.
Absolutely. And, you know, when we see in other states and even in Wisconsin after Dobbs, women being turned away from hospital emergency rooms, women being forced to bleed out and go septic in a Walmart parking lot, that is a nightmare. And the more people see of the anti-choice hellscape that these Republican extremists want to create for us, the less they want of it. And I think it's really important that, you know, people will vote for elected officials, even if they don't agree with every single thing that person believes in, because diverse country, right? We're never going to agree 100% on anything, but they want politicians who are going to stand up for what they believe in.
There you go. Kelda Royce, thank you very much. Appreciate it. We'll talk again real soon. All right. I'm Pat Kreitlow, reminding you that it's all about every one of those words in our national promise, liberty and justice for all. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.